All right, and welcome back to another episode of The Devil Wears Rossinero, the official podcast of SB Nation's AC Milan Offside. I'm Patrick Stoll at Stoll underscore P on Twitter. He's Tim Fontenot at Tim Fontenot DWR on Twitter. And the site Twitter is, of course, at SBN Rossinero. We are back. We took our own little international break. And of course, we apologize for the delay in content. We apologize that we haven't been able to get anything out for about a month. We do know that a lot has happened since we last spoke, so we'll do our best to kind of catch up and reset on everything because, yeah, not short on anything to talk about, but we, you know, sometimes life happens, and life certainly happened for both of us over the past month. Meanwhile, Milan has continued on its trajectory of bleh, I guess. Since we last spoke, here are the scores. And yes, this is actually a thing. 2-1 loss to Torino. 3-1 loss to Fiorentina. 2-1 loss to 2-1 win over Genoa. 2-2 draw to Lecce. 2-1 loss to Roma. 1-0 win over Spal. And now, in the death row edition of Milan's season, 2-1 loss to Lazio and a 1-0 loss to Juventus. Of course, our last episode coming after our 2-0 loss to Inter in the derby, which we were mutually devastated about after that disaster of a performance. Milan currently sitting in 14th with 13 points. Other teams with 13 points is Sassuolo, right behind us, 12 points, Bologna, and right in front of us are Torino and Udinese with 14. So, good to know that even when we're not doing the podcast, the mojo that we were trying of maybe if we don't do a podcast, the form will turn around, like the superstition we were trying, well, that didn't work either. So, on that note, I'll bring in my man Tim Fontenot. Tim, how are you, buddy? Busy couple weeks. How's everything holding up on your end?
Pretty good, man. I mean, it, like you said, very busy time for both of us, and we'll get into a little bit about our lives here in a second. But I gotta ask you, when we went on this little hiatus, and we had a feeling we were gonna be off the air for a few weeks, did you think that when we came back, we would be 11 points off of fourth place, and that team in fourth place would be Cagliari?
No. If you had told me Cagliari would have been in fourth, I would have called you insane. And I would, I mean, if you had told me that we would be 11 points off of fourth, I wouldn't have been too shocked just because of how poorly we were playing at the time. But the fact that it's Cagliari and not a team like Atalanta or Roma, that's the most surprising thing to me. I mean, definitely one of the stories of Serie A so far.
It just, like, you read off all those scores, and I'm just thinking about the continuous shots in the foot they gave themselves. Like, honestly, like, what has this season been? I mean, things, like, Giampaolo's gone. That had to happen. I mean, we all got to a point where that was the last straw, and it just took a few people in the front office a little longer than a bunch of the rest of us. And the Stefano Pioli hiring was as underwhelming as it could have possibly been, to the point where when he was, before he was even official, Pioli out was trending. So I guess I'm going to say I've been pleasantly surprised at, you know, it's been tough to watch every match full 90 given the events that we've been dealing with over the last few weeks. Or I shouldn't say dealing with. It sounds like it was a burden. We've had a good few weeks. But the results. I mean, a few players.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these players, from what it looks like, what it sounds like, everything's coming together better. Like the ideas, the system, everything. But the players are constantly letting Pioli and the fans and the club down. I mean, Piatek is apparently gonna score maybe a goal for every 30 million euros that Milan paid for him. Something like that may be the piece. Unbelievable. And, you know, I don't get it. I really can't understand how this team, which has enough talent to be up in that top four race at the worst, is so far off the pace behind teams like Udinese and Torino and Verona and Parma and Cagliari. I mean, it's just inexcusable, and especially in a season where Roma have not proven to be top four quality, Napoli have been a mess, and now apparently are even more of a mess than we are, given the reports coming out of the camp. I mean, there's no excuse for what's happening right now.
It's a whole lot of factors combined into one. Just starting with the beginning of the season, right? You had Gianpaolo, at the very least, attempting to add players to play his system. But then he didn't really play those players in that system. And then he abandoned the system entirely. And then when he finally found something that worked, they were already in a hole. So then they were result chasing. Combine that with the players just not performing that well. Just completely, you cannot deny, regardless of the manager, the lack of quality that we have seen on the pitch time and time and time again. So you have the manager, the system, the players, and if none of those three are firing, you're going to lose. So when they're chasing these results against teams that are better than them, Inter, or teams that are, shouldn't be better than them, right? Udinese, first game of the season, that train wreck, a 1-0 over Brescia, the 1-0 over Verona, which was completely underwhelming, and then, you know, you lose to Inter, which we knew was going to happen, but it was frustrating in the process, and then it just completely all falls apart, right? So, look, if you invest in Gianpaolo and you hand the reins to Gianpaolo, you are saying, we believe you're the guy. We are giving you the control. We will buy your players, with the assumption, and invest is the good word, that you are going to be the guy for us and that your system and belief is the right thing that matches with the club. Clearly something was off there. Either Gianpaolo's system wasn't what he pitched it to be, or it didn't work the right way, which it didn't. And then he got rid of it. So now what are we doing? The players aren't playing the way that they need to or want to. And Gianpaolo stopped being the guy to drag it out of them. At least with Gattuso, he could drag the heart and soul out of players and be like, you know, like, come on, give it to us for the club. And that wasn't happening with Gianpaolo either. So clearly, getting rid of Gianpaolo was the right decision, because if you don't have the system and the coach isn't doing much else and the players aren't performing, what do you have? You don't have anything and the results aren't happening. So then it comes down to trust. Do we trust you? And clearly the answer was no. Clearly, they signed on to something else than they got, which happens. But it's unfortunate that that came under their first, like, the guy, right? Their guy from day one was Gianpaolo, because of, you know, the state of the club at the time and the managers available and the money that's able to offer and the players that can be brought in. All the factors said Gianpaolo. Okay, great. We'll get Gianpaolo. I think everyone was kind of on the same page. And then the season started and we stopped being on the same page. So getting rid of Gianpaolo, I'm with it. I wanted to stick with him. I wanted it to work. And then it never worked. And it was time to pull the plug. and it was time to say, all right, we gotta get something going. I hate the coaching carousel. I hate we're doing it again. But Pioli was, by every single indication, just a completely give up choice, right? I was one of the guys saying, like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Seriously, we're going to bring in this guy? This is the guy, right? I'm a Marcelino guy. I'm a Marcelino truther. I think
we both endorsed him a few weeks before all this even started.
It would make a lot of sense, but I get also it might be similar to the Spalletti situation, where I honestly think Spalletti would have been fine because he's gotten people top four before, and at the same time, it's going to be hard to take him away from that paycheck that Inter is still cutting him.
Patrick, you there?
Meanwhile, Inter second place, 1 point behind Juve. So, Pioli's appointment, and then the results don't start coming in for him either. It's like, oh my God, we're never going to get there. We're never going to. The stars for this team this season are not going to align. Our predictions of like fourth place and third place and this and that, I mean, we're all wrong. We're every single one of us. We're all wrong. And now we're seeing it kind of come together, right? We're all still wrong because we had the faith in Giampaolo and he proved us wrong. We had the faith in the players. The players have proved us wrong. We had the faith in the system. Wrong. We had faith in trying it some other way. Also wrong. And so now it goes, okay, well, we need to trust Pioli as much as we can, which I think he's starting to earn that trust. I think, given the players and given the situation, I think he's doing fine. This death stretch, right? 2-1 loss to Roma. They're a better team. Yep, that was going to happen. 1-0 win against Spal. All right. That is a good that's a good 3 points.
Yeah.
Good stuff. And then you lose to Lazio. Yep, that'll happen. You lose to Juventus, and you honestly have some good moments in the game. That's also going to happen. And now we got Napoli on the weekend, and they're going to lose that too. Make no mistake about it.
Although, if you're going to play Napoli, this is the time to play Napoli.
This is definitely the week to play Napoli, given that they are in absolute chaos. Complete and utter, top to bottom, on and off the pitch chaos. But, I mean, if the Napoli players can put it together in any sort of way, we're hosed. Like, we have to have our best game and they have to have their worst game. That is basically the way to wrap up what we've seen. We saw the Giampaolo project completely fall apart and there were no redeeming qualities left. So we had to reboot. And now we're at Pioli. My concern is, and I'm looking at the table now, here's the full list of teams that are ahead of AC Milan right now. In order. Sassuolo, Udinese, Torino, Hellas Verona, Fiorentina, whom is led by Vincenzo Montella, who I continually said at the beginning of the season is trying his best to get the team relegated, and look at them now, so that I guess that's another time I've been wrong. Parma, Napoli, Roma, Atalanta, Cagliari, surprise of the season, Lazio, Inter, Juve. We are not better than Juve, Inter, Lazio, Roma, Napoli, Atalanta. And at this point, probably Cagliari. I mean, they're having that kind of a season, so I'll give it to them too. We're looking at a best case like eighth right now, which goes into like peak banter era disaster result seasons. And that's where we are.
I feel like those were the Jamel Mesba, Kevin Constant, Sully Montari days.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is like Montari days 2.0, where where it's Barini instead. And
Conti is Mesba.
Oh god. Conti. I mean, I just hashed out the managers. But the players, I mean, for the love of God, can we get like anybody in form? Like at all? Like, and as soon as someone, this is my favorite part, as soon as somebody gets into form, they get injured or suspended. Bennacer, yellow card accumulation. Great. And it's like Çalhanoğlu. As soon as he has like a bright moment and everyone starts hating him just a little less, yellow card accumulation. Great. Okay, so we don't have to play Çalhanoğlu now, which is good, but we also can't play Bennacer, which is bad. So, like, the only things we have going right now, and let me pull up the roster against Juventus, right? Because, I mean, the loss will happen, but the lineup in 4-3-3, Donnarumma, I think he's doing fine again.
The Lazio game was a little rough, but...
Yeah, it's just... I feel like we know what we have in him, and he's still young and makes mistakes, but the least of our problems is him and Romagnoli. If there are two untouchable players, it's them. Teo Hernandez has really grown into his role. I'm glad that we don't have to see Ricardo Rodriguez anymore. Romagnoli, Duarte? I'm starting to have some high, like, not high hopes or high expectations. Just, like, I'm starting to trust him a little bit more. Conti, whatever. Krunic over Kessié.
I've been waiting for the moment to bring this up, speaking of Kessié. I know we're still going through the lineup, but we've been going back to a few things we talked about at the beginning of the season. Who do you think would play ahead of the other in this team or any team? Kessié or Morgan Gibbs-White?
I mean, it's still got to be Kessié.
Yeah.
It's still got to be Kessié.
But, I mean, at this point, it's a little closer.
Yeah, it definitely is. That take is looking a little closer, which is really upsetting because I still have no idea who Morgan Gibbs-White is.
It's not scorching hot. It's not freezing cold. It's tepid.
It's getting there. It's like Mama Bear and the Three Bears warm right now. Like it's not just right yet. But I'm still waiting to see Gibbs-White play a game for Wolves, by the way. I have not seen him at all. I literally have not heard that name since. Like I legitimately forgot the dude's name. So Krunic, Bennacer, yellow card accumulation, because what is a Milan game against Juve without five AC Milan yellow cards? Paquetá, also, I feel like we know who he is. I feel like we know what we have in him. And sometimes he's gonna frustrate the hell out of us, but the talent is so clearly there. Çalhanoğlu is like the newest hit or miss of AC Milan, where he's either like go, 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 like he's on, or he is an absolute Muppet out there. Piontek has assumed the role of just constantly being a Muppet. And then there's Suso, who... You know that part of SpongeBob where Patrick goes, the inner machinations of my mind are an enigma? Like, that's Suso. Like, I have no idea about Suso anymore. I legitimately got nothing. I have no idea. Is he going to stay? Is he going to leave? Is he going to start? Yeah, he's going to start. Is he going to score? No. Is he going to pass? Is he going to just rifle shots? Is it Suso ball? Is it not? I have no clue. He just fired his agent. I legitimately have no idea what to do about Suso.
Greatest description of a footballer I've heard in a long time. And I, he truly is an enigma. I really don't know what to expect, especially after the firing of the agent. I mean, hey, he's been a good sport and hung around for a long time when he really could have gone anywhere else. But man, I don't know. I feel like he's either going to be the hero or a massive hindrance. And it's just so frustrating. And you know what? I thought, you know, from what I saw of the Juventus game, there were times where he was looking to play hero. And then he would put the ball in, and there's Christoph Piatek not playing like a 35 million euro striker. Not playing like the guy we had for parts of last season. Just the ball hits his head, and it's like he was trying to avoid it in a game of dodgeball or something like that.
Like a glitch in FIFA every time Piatek touches the ball now.
It's like you hit B, but then didn't hit B as you were actually trying to shoot. But it turns out it was actually, you did. So now you have the precise shot and you end up mistiming it horribly. And so it goes out for a throw-in.
It's just, I mean, the slide in form of almost every player on the team except for Romagnoli, whom some sources say is not good enough to play for Italy. Also wrong. The slide in form of almost everybody is just startling. And it's a big factor. And I don't know how much, I mean, coaches can put players in the position to succeed and they can do the right thing with the players. But when it comes right down to it, it's the quality of the players, right? So, you know, a good manager can boost a good team. And a good manager can boost a not great team. But really, the only thing you can do is a good manager and a good team. And that's what you have in Inter, and that's what you have in Juve, right? You have a good manager and you have a good team. Clearly, Milan not only didn't have the good manager, but they also don't have a good team. They just don't. The team is not what we thought this team was going to be. We haven't seen that at all. I don't remember one game, but maybe for like 15 minutes against Inter, where I was like, this is working. This is it. Or this is sustainable, or even like consistently positive, right? Like we're just not seeing it.
And I don't know what can be done with this current team to fix that. Like, I mean, you can bring in Rafael Leao, and from that team that was on the bench against Juve, I mean, you brought in Bonaventura and Rebic as well, but starting any of those guys, what kind of impact would they make? I mean, Leao could probably, I mean, he's young, he's really inspiring from what we've seen so far. He could probably end up stepping up and becoming a world beater on this team. I don't know. But I mean, other than that, where is it? I mean, the one positive I'm looking at on the bench is that the name Mattia Caldara is there. And we haven't seen him play for Milan yet. We've seen him play 45 minutes in a Coppa Italia match, I believe, is the extent of what we've seen. And he's been out for more than a year. What's he going to be when he's actually back on the field?
I'm not even sure I'm counting Caldara anymore. Like, my patience and optimism for Caldara is just about gone. And like, that's the eternal pessimist in me. But like, we keep saying, right, he's this bright young defender, which he was, and he will make an impact, which he can. But it's like, when he comes back, when is he going to come back? And like, is he ever going to be healthy? Like, it literally every single time he's like 2 weeks away, he gets injured again.
And you know, the thing is, when he is fully healthy and when he does come back, that's literally the area of least concern, I think, right now in this team. Because like we were just talking about Leo Duarte, we're building confidence in him and he looks really promising. And you know, Masacchio, serviceable, as we've said. They're playing next to one of the best center backs in Europe, arguably one of the best in Serie A, with a really good goalkeeper behind them, a left back who is rapidly improving, and whoever is in that center back spot is stuck next to Conte, so he's just not going to do anything for you. There are so many bigger problems than center back in this team. And so I feel like, you know, we've been talking about being excited for Caldara to come back, but when he is fully healthy, is there a role for him? Does it matter if there's a role for him? And how many years away are we from him becoming a star player at Cagliari or Sassuolo and then making his way back into the Juventus squad?
I mean, first of all, that hurt my soul to hear. Second of all, if Caldara was a midfielder, I would have a little more patience. Because I'd be like, you know what? Throw someone out there. Throw, you know, warm bodies at this point. Give something a shot, right? You mentioned changes. Like, what can we do, right? Because we have this squad, and to a level, we're stuck with it, right? This is what we got, because this is where the state of the club, this is where this starts playing in, right? As you go into January, and we are not going to make the Champions League, and we're not going to make the Europa League, and we're not having anything come in from Europe this season, which, by the way, I almost would have rather us had Europa League this season so that we would have more games to try and figure our lives out. Like, if we can just get them on the pitch and do something, I almost would have rather had that instead of like, all right, now we got to wait another week. Let's see if this works. The Giampaolo Montella method.
Hindsight, we were really way too sarcastic about that Europa League self-imposed ban.
Yeah. I think we were a little too accepting of that.
Yeah.
A little too passive about that. But when you look at the squad we have, right? So we're in debt. We're not having a lot of money coming in. We're not good. And our quality players are not playing to their quality, and the rest are not quality players. So what do? You can try to add in January, but then we're going to run into Financial Fair Play, who's breathing down our necks because they're busy ignoring City and PSG. So what do? Do we spend money in January a la Paqueta and Piontek, which apparently like worked out to about a quarter good, because Paqueta is like half and half and Piontek is evidently not, which stinks. But what do you do? So you go into January, who can you add like Piontek last season that'll make a big impact for you? Or I don't know, who will have more than just a half season impact. I don't know what you do. I've seen links to Mandzukic. I've seen links to Xhaka. I've seen links to Torreira, which give me that, right? Who's the River Plate attacker that Milan was linked to, or the midfielder? Give me a second. Lucas Martinez Quarta. Yeah, so he is actually a defender, excuse me. So they were talking with him, and then in late October, they put the deal on hold. Probably because we're an absolute mess. So, you know, you talk about him, you talk about, you know, I have Milan eye up right now. You know, Moise Keane. Does Suso stay or go? Do you add Torreira, which would be a lock? I would love Torreira. Do you add Ibrahimovic? Right? Like, and you're going to keep hearing the name Xhaka because He's not coming back to Arsenal. And you know who has good, or who has a link with Arsenal?
Oh, gee, I wonder who.
Yeah.
One of the guys responsible for Xhaka being at Arsenal?
For signing players. So now, not only do you come into the issue of buying the players, but player recruitment. Who do you target? Who do you go for? What are you looking for? And how do you entice players to a club that's a disaster right now? So this is what we're going to be talking about. I mean, it is mid-November, right? And we are lost. We are completely in the deep end with no idea how to swim right now. And what we need is 6-5-4. That's the spots we need. If we finish sixth, happens. If you finish fifth like last year, cool. If you finish fourth, it's great because we're back in Champions League. None of that is going to happen.
So, it already feels like a throwaway season on November 12th.
Oh, it was gone. It was. I mean, shoot, this was a throwaway season October 23rd. So, I don't know where we're supposed to go. We can't change the manager again, or can you? A la Watford, look out for that. Maybe, you know. You can't, and I've gone through the whole coaching carousel dance before, right? You can't change your manager every single season and expect continuity and consistency and an increase in performance. That's what they've kept doing. But now we're just looking at the players. We're like, what do we do? Because we can't spend a ton of money in the summer. So the one season we tried that, none of them worked out. And then we got in trouble with financial fair play. I legitimately have no idea where we go from here. And the only thing we can do is take it one game at a time. And the next game is against a messed up Napoli after the international break.
Yeah. And I mean, if you win that game, great. But then where do you go from there? I mean, hopefully you can use that as a revival point in your season. But really, what can you do? If these players continue to be the players that we've seen for the first 3 months of this season, one, there's no way that they can even actually beat Napoli, even given the mess that Napoli is right now. And what does it mean for the rest of the season other than, hey, we're just trying to get as close to the top six as possible to maybe build some momentum toward next season or whatever. Some stupid excuse. I don't know. And all those players you listed wanted Torreira before he went to Arsenal. Should have had him. I don't understand it. Xhaka, no. Absolutely not. And apparently Arsenal want $50 million for him? Something like that? Like, are you joking? What sort of leverage do you think you have in any negotiation?
Will you take 10?
Yeah. 10 pounds? 10 euros? Or just
like cents?
10, like 10 pieces of M&Ms or
10 sandwiches?
Yeah.
I'll give you a pizza.
Yeah, exactly. One topping or two?
Only one.
Fair. On half.
Yeah, for only, but that's for Xhaka. If it were for Torreira, then I'll talk more pizzas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
for Xhaka, I mean, considering if I give him the pizza, he's just going to flip me off and throw his jersey on the ground.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I could see Ibrahimovic coming back. Look, and if he does, it's, you would expect it to light a fire under the other players. I mean, he's proven at a team like, you know, obviously much lower level, but I think with LA Galaxy, and you can even say at Manchester United, because they actually had some pretty half-decent results with him. And that team wasn't really all that inspiring when he ended up there under Mourinho. He can really light a fire under an underwhelming, mediocre team. And he can really help them get results. And yeah, he's not going to score 30 goals like he did in Los Angeles this year. But he's... I look at some of those misses that Piatek has this season, and I'm like, Ibrahimovic would put that in. Doesn't matter what kind of defense he's playing against. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, he only all scored all those goals because he was in MLS. Well, yeah, I mean, the quality of MLS is clearly not there. And I'm saying that is the biggest stan of the league in the world. But he's Zlatan, and he's proven it at every level. He's proven it in Sweden, in the Netherlands, in Spain, in Italy, in England, in the United States. Where he goes, he scores. And that's really, I mean, that's one of the biggest problems that Milan has right now. It's just an inability to score. The only teams with fewer goals than them this season are Verona, Brescia, Udinese, Sampdoria, and Spal. And
half of those teams are above us.
Yes, and the others are locked in the relegation battle with Milan at the moment. So, he's the kind of guy you can bring in to just, like, be a catalyst almost and just kind of like a rallying cry and maybe inspire your fans a little bit where there's absolutely no reason for inspiration. So, I don't know. What else do you do in January? Mandzukic is going to cost you money probably. Anyone else is going to cost you money. This Everton that we've been talking about, not just Moise Kean from Everton, but Everton the player, the Brazilian international. We wanted him in the summer. We've wanted him ever since. But he's expensive. And so is financial fair play if you're not City or PSG or Juventus, who just made this whole big deal with their shirt sponsor to give them even more money so that they can have even more money. Yeah, exactly. So financial fair play is a scam, but I mean, what can you do? So,
yeah, but what else is new?
Yeah, so I mean, they're in a throwaway situation. It's not like January of 2011 where you signed Mark Van Bommel and that's the final piece that was missing in a Scudetto run. I mean, you're stuck right now. You have absolutely nothing to play for at this point. And the more this season goes, the more I miss Gattuso, because I just wonder what this team would be doing under Gattuso right now, because the players reported that we've learned in the last few weeks did not want him gone. They didn't want him to resign. And honestly, I think if he was still around, this team is probably in a much better spot, because he's not the most brilliant tactician of all time. But, you know, I love him because with him, it's not necessarily about tactics. It's he can get results out of players. And really, at the end of the day, that's what's most important. It's like, I don't care about how you play if you're getting results. The result is what matters most. If you want to win and win pretty, by all means, I love it. But if you want to win ugly, that's totally fine by me too, as long as you're winning.
Yeah, I think you can very easily add Gattuso to the list of too easily dismissed, because we were all very quick to get rid of Gattuso, and honestly, if we had him, I mean, we'd be in top half, which we're not even close right now. Well, we are close. We're 3 points off of ninth. So, you know, 2 points off of tenth. It's salvageable. We can, you know, they can work it out. But, I mean, I think, you know who else we dismissed rather quickly? Jose Mourinho. And Arsene Wenger. Because, like, honestly, would you say no to Mourinho right now?
Right now? No.
Exactly. Would you say no to Mourinho right after Gianpaolo? No. Exactly. Wenger, I don't know. I also would not say no to. I'm a little less enthusiastic, obviously, but I would take him. I'd take Mourinho, Marcelino Truther. Allegri. But you start getting into that upper echelon of people who aren't going to come to a mess of a club. As for Ibrahimovic, I'll take him. I'll absolutely take him. I know that some of the guys in the AC Milan offside group chat are a little more hesitant, because he plays in MLS, and because he's older and he's had surgeries and stuff. First of all, this dude is a Terminator. All right, this dude is actually a Terminator. If you look at the way he takes care of his body and recovers from things, I mean, if he were to get hurt, yeah, that would happen. But honestly, I don't have physical concerns about him. He's an absolute machine. And you try not performing around Ibrahimovic and see what happens. That's what we need. And you mentioned the word was catalyst. I'm all on board. Ibra in. Someone mentioned if Ibra went to Milan, he would want to go into management after. I'm like, can you imagine Zlatan as a manager? I have no idea what those tactics would look like. But, I mean, put him and Gattuso just as like a motivation team. I mean, good luck.
And here's the other thing about Zlatan, and that even more so. So one of the things that's been most hurtful over these last few years with Milan is the weakening of the position on a global scale. The viewership's not there. The interest globally is not there. Just bringing him in alone, suddenly everyone's watching you again. And they're reminded of what Milan was, and they're reminded of what they were with him, and they're reminded of what the team could be. And it's gonna, like, it, I don't think that it would be a circus of the point where he's grabbing his crotch all the time as the last time we saw Zlatan was, but I think that it would get people talking about the club again, and it would make other players look at the club and say, look, especially if he's going to hang around, that seems like a place to be. So I don't know, maybe Christian Pavon keeps killing it, and then he wants to reunite with Zlatan, because that partnership, I'll tell you what, you can say whatever you want about MLS, but I will always love watching it, and I love watching Zlatan and Pavon play together.
They were really, really good.
But that's also going to cost money.
Yeah, but it's coming from MLS, though.
Yeah,
that true. There is something to be said. That the one objective thing you can say about MLS is that it is not too expensive to get players from them.
Yeah.
Because Almiron was 25.
Right.
And I know he hasn't scored. He should have. He should have at least a goal for Newcastle right
now. He's had some really good performances.
Really, really good. But speaking of, so now that we've kind of wrapped up Milan a little bit, few things that have happened while we were away. One was, I think you'll enjoy this. So when our man Alexi Lalas had a take that Carlos Vela is top, I think he said 25 in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you remember that?
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, okay. So he said that, and one of the AC Milan offside guys said he's not even top 100. Top 200 would be generous. To which the Angels on Parade blog, which, context, I also write for them, said, that's really funny. Wouldn't Carlos Vela slot into your lineup immediately?
Yikes.
Which, yes, he would. And so I just saw my two blogs just going at it. One being a little more petty than the other, admittedly.
You don't have to say which one.
Yeah. One being a little more petty and angry, and the other being just kind of like, who hurt you?
Yeah.
So that was interesting, seeing mom and dad fight on Twitter. as I'm just sitting there scrolling, I was like, what the hell is going on here? And my blog manager at AC Milan, or excuse me, Angels on Parade, it's confusing that both of them begin with A, Alicia Rodriguez, said, Patrick, forgive me, like, just before I respond, Milan is not good, correct?
Like, much respect to Alicia on that one. Really enjoy her work.
I was like, no, we're not. We're not. We would have Vela in a heartbeat. She's like, you're stealing that.
Yeah, so please.
That was one of the many things that happened in these last couple weeks. Other things that happened. MLS Cup, you were in Seattle.
I was in Seattle, yeah.
Rave reviews about that city for the MLS Cup final.
Being at MLS Cup, I mean, it's been a dream of mine for a long time to be able to go there, and it's never really worked out with work until this year, and I am forever grateful for the opportunity because that was one of the most unbelievable experiences. I got in on Friday, and you could just tell around the whole city, like, it felt like a Super Bowl atmosphere, and that's not even exaggerating. I mean, we're talking about an NFL city. Like, people know Seahawks fans are crazy, but I think what goes really underappreciated outside of our little MLS bubble is these people love the Sounders, and they are such an important part of the city. And so it definitely, like I said earlier, it definitely helped that the Seahawks are playing on a Monday night, but I don't think it would have mattered being in that city. And so Sunday morning, day of the game, me and my coworkers are in the Occidental Park, which is where all the fans gather before the game. And we were, I was helping with the ESPN Twitter pregame show that goes on 30 minutes before the game starts. And I had been helping with those throughout the postseason, but it was the first time I was able to produce on site. And we got there at 8:15 or so, already good crowd there, but by 9:15, 9:30, you could not move at all. I mean, I had to go about three blocks carrying two camera bags and my backpack, and I just ended up having to barrel through people. Like, I literally, like, no one could make space for me. Like, thousands of people trying to clear the way, and they just couldn't. And then you get into the stadium. The place is buzzing before the game. The Toronto traveled really well across the country. You know, they filled up the entire away section that Seattle provides. And during the game, I mean, head rattling, like, just back and forth, because it was so loud. It was vibrating. And I have videos on my phone. For the first 25 minutes, half hour of the game, I was right on the field, and I was right in front of the Seattle supporters. And when they did their famous Seattle Sounders call and response, you had to have been able to hear it outside the stadium, like, several blocks. I mean, it was just, it echoed. And it was one of the loudest noises I've ever heard, especially at a sporting event. I mean, I've been to some pretty loud events, but they had more fans there than they've ever had for a Seahawks game. And the, like, you know, a couple years ago at a Seahawks game, Marshawn Lynch broke out on that run, and ended up registering on the Richter scale.
Yeah.
Like, it caused a seismic shift on a plate under Seattle. Honestly, this may have rivaled it. Like, the noise from the chant, from when Seattle scored their second, third goals when the game ended and they won the title. I mean, it was so cool to be there and to experience. Like, and being anywhere and experiencing a team winning a title is special. I've been to an NCAA championship game for basketball. That was unbelievable. But to be in Seattle and to experience the Sounders winning in front of their fans for the first time, hosting the game for the first time, was, man, it was wild. And it was like one of those things where, you know, I was neutral being there for work, and also, you know, I'm an Orlando City fan, why would I care about another MLS team? but you wanted to see Seattle pull it out because you wanted to see how special this city could be after the fact, and it did not disappoint.
That, I mean, everything I've heard has just sounded absolutely electric. I was on board running our broadcast of the game for FC, and just the noise level sounded incredible. The crowd was buzzing the whole time. I love the, like, when they were yelling after goals, just the fact that they do the, like, the crowd response goal call thing is just absolutely electric. So I couldn't get enough of that. And
I have a couple of videos. Sorry. I have a couple of videos on my Twitter account too, after goals and after the game. And then the call and response, if people want to check them out, they're really, I mean, they were loud.
Yeah. I mean, and if Seattle is one thing, it's loud. And of course, at T Fontenot DWR, I believe I said at the beginning, Tim Fontenot, it's T Fontenot on Twitter, T Fontenot DWR. So that is just one of the things, that has kept us a little busy. We mentioned before we went that we were taking our own little international break. In the meantime, I prepared for my wedding, got married, and then went on my honeymoon. So that was incredible. Obviously, just, you know, fantastic experience.
Very exciting for you.
Thank you. Just seeing everyone there was incredible. And, you know, the week of was, like, setting up and stressing out, like, just making sure everything was good. And then there was the rehearsal dinner, which was incredibly done by my parents. And then the wedding, which was amazing, the reception. And then we left the next morning to St. Simon's Island in Georgia, which, if you are familiar with it, you know it is like southeastern Georgia. Like, it is almost Florida. And it was 75 degrees the entire week. And it was awesome. It was just like relaxing the entire time, which was really, really nice. Went to Savannah for a day. That city is really pretty. Really, really nice. And then, of course, the week after the honeymoon was re-entry into work, for which I produced a show all week. So it was like, all right, welcome back to work. Bam. So that was really just loaded. So I was like, all right, I gotta get myself back into, like, actual functioning.
We were trying to get a couple shows done. I know we took that long break, but I remember I texted you and I was like, hey, so you have any good days this week to do it? And then as soon as I texted you, I'm like, why did I just do that? I know he's getting ready for his wedding. And I was just like, what am I doing?
Nah, it was, yeah. It was just like, if you've ever prepared for a wedding, congrats for making it through. Yeah. Planning a wedding, because we went for like a bit of a lower key thing. We did an earlier in the afternoon wedding, and so we had a reception. Our wedding was at 2, and our reception ended at like 6:30-ish. So we didn't do a dinner, but so instead of doing that, we ended up, we had it catered by a local crepe place, which was awesome. It was awesome. So we had that, which was great, but we had to set up the reception and, like, figure out the reception, because we had in the same place as the wedding as well. We had to figure out how to do that logistically and make sure there was, like, seating for everyone, but also not like dinner seating. And just, there were a bunch of people because my wife has a very large family. So it just, a lot of factors, and you're like, wow, this is really stressful. And you're just going through the week. Like, the last day of work I took was Tuesday. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we're setting up for the wedding. Friday was the rehearsal. And then after the rehearsal, it was like, all right, hands off. Things are going to happen. We'll be fine. It's going to make it. But off to the rehearsal dinner, it was like, all right, celebration mode, I guess. And it was just, everything turned out absolutely fantastic. And I would say to follow my wife, but she doesn't really go on Twitter, so don't worry about that. But yeah, so she's fantastic. We're waiting on getting our pictures back. Hooray. We have a couple pictures now. And yeah, they are. I mean, the feeling of getting like the wedding pictures back is just like awesome. So that is what we have been up to. Wedding prep, wedding, honeymoon, re-entry. And then it was a bit, I think then after that, it was just like a busy week. But good to have the podcast back. Oh, wait, I just realized it is the 12th. So this is my 1 month anniversary. So that is fun. So we are officially back. But yeah, no. So thank you, listeners, especially if you've made it this far into the podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sticking with us. We do know that it is a little frustrating given a little bit of inconsistency, but we thank you for sticking with us. We thank you for your understanding, and we are back. We are going to be back again soon to preview and or recap Napoli, which is after the international break, because of course, international break, but Milan can probably use it. So on that note, thank you very much for listening to another episode of The Devil Wears Rossinero. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We hope you will check out all our other episodes. Rate and subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating, subscribe, retweet, all the good stuff. We really appreciate your support. I'm Patrick Stoll. He's Tim Fontenot, at Stoll_P, at TFontenotDWR, and at SBN Rossinero, where you can find our work. Thanks again for listening. For Tim, for the staff of the AC Milan Offside, I'm Patrick. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time.
The inner machinations of my mind are an enigma.